Hello everyone, and welcome to this week's Big Boat interview. I'm Sophia Wilson, Digital Content Director at Boat International, and this week I was joined in the studio by Johnny Horsfield, Founder and Design Director at H2 Yacht Design. We had a great chat about some of H2's most iconic and exciting projects, including Turquoise Go, Ulysses, of course now known as Andromeda, and Project Rev. We also discussed industry trends and challenges, and of course the age-old debate as to whether the pen or the computer is a mightier design tool. I hope you enjoy the interview. Today, I'm joined by Johnny Horsfield, owner and design director of H2 Yacht Design. Johnny has very kindly come into Bait HQ to record the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Johnny, the portfolio of yachts that H2 has worked on is pretty vast, but maybe let's start at the beginning. How did you first get involved in yacht design?
Well, I think it was by accident as much as anything. I think like a lot of British-based designers of my generation, we started out doing transport design, studying car design, really. And I then graduated and was looking for a job. And frankly, I got offered a job in the yacht industry with Martin Francis through a good friend of mine. And I started working for Martin down in the south of France, thinking that this would just be a bit of fun for a few months. And then in the end, here I am, 35 years later, still in the industry. So I kind of fell into it by accident, really.
And how did that progress from obviously being in South France, then coming back and setting up H2 in London?
Well, I came back to London and worked for Don Starkey Designs. I worked for him for about 4 years. And then, unfortunately, we were all made redundant, actually, at the end of 1993, because there was a big recession at that time. And so basically myself and one of the guys there, we just said, well, look, let's try and set up on our own. It was a little early. I mean, I was 28, so I probably wasn't quite ready for it or didn't think I did. But the other guy, a guy called Steve Howard, he was a lot older than me. So we thought, hence the H2, Howard and Horsfield. So we thought, yeah, let's do it. And he stayed in the business until about 2005-06, and I bought him out, and he's retired now. But I think it gave me the confidence to kind of get involved in my own business, slightly earlier than I expected, but having the two of us, they kind of work really well together.
And when HG first started, it had more of a kind of refit focus, is that right?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it was partly through the way the industry was as well. And there was a lot more refit work and probably, less new builds like there is today. Our contacts at the time, we were like looking for, any work really. And, there was obviously, there was a lot of some winter refits, and we thought, well, let's get involved with those. So we had to kind of prove ourselves. And so it was actually a great business in a way, because it was short and sharp. It was, it kept us with cash flow, and, we got to meet, some really, interesting clients, and it was good practice for us to kind of learn. But the problem was, you do end up getting sort of pigeonholed a little bit, into sort of refit sort of specialists. And I felt that by sort of after about, 6 or 7 years of this, we suddenly realized that maybe we were being sort of sidelined a little bit on the new builds. The brokers all said, oh, you do refits, don't you? We're like, no, that's just the way, that's the way it's fallen. But so I had to kind of really push hard to kind of get our names onto onto the lists, I suppose, of the new builds. And that really sort of happened in sort of, early 2003, 2004, sort of five.
And was there a particular project that you think helped kind of showcase that new build side? Can you remember like one or two that you felt were a turning point?
We had a couple of smaller things. We did a little Tigrador barge and a few other little smaller sort of new build stuff. But I guess we did a yacht called Talisman, which is now called Talisman Maiton. And that was our first sort of proper new build, 50 meter plus kind of project, obviously built at Turquoise. So hence the connection, which I think, you talk about later, about our connection with Turkey. That's kind of where it kind of started. But it actually had started a little bit before then. Because Steve had, we'd both worked for Don Starkey, and we'd been working in Turkey actually already on other projects, and so our initial contacts and our initial work was kind of actually in Turkey on doing refit work even in Turkey. So hence we've had a long association with Turkey,
and that Turkish association is obviously continuing now. What do you think Turkey brings to the CPO industry, and why do you enjoy particularly working with projects based out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, the obvious, you know, they bring an alternative to the traditional, you know, German, Dutch, Italian sort of brands. It's a cost-effective solution. There's no doubt about it. But I mean, more importantly, that it's a country that is going places, and they have a can-do attitude, and they are easy to work with. You know, they're flexible. They're listening. You know, they're good at listening to what you want. And I think they're very passionate about what they do. And I think, you know, it's not for everybody. You know, a lot of clients are a little bit, you know, not suspicious, but they don't always understand the, you know, geopolitics of, you know, Turkey, and it's nothing like what people imagine. It's a very stable and westernized country, and, you know, Istanbul particularly is a booming sort of metropolis, and, you know, they have an ability to be able to turn their hand to everything, and so. It's sometimes a challenge. I mean, you're always, you know, they're learning. You know, we teach them how to new things in the yacht industry as well. But ultimately, it's been a very successful relationship.
And how much time do you find you end up spending in Turkey personally? Obviously, a bit trickier during COVID times,
yeah,
but I presume you.
Yeah, I go over there probably once a month at least. But the good thing is I can sort of drop into different shipyards. I can do two or three yards at the same time. It's like a week out. But I mean, sometimes it's quite nice to be able to spend the weekend there afterwards. In Istanbul as well, because, you know, the problem with all these places is you go there and you're kind of rushing from the airport to the shipyard, and then you're rushing back to the airport, and actually you never see any of these places. So I do try and make a conscious effort to try and spend a bit more time in downtown Istanbul occasionally, which is, you know, pretty hectic place.
And without wishing to pigeonhole you, I guess the other thing that H2 has come to be associated with is some, you know, big explorer yacht projects, particularly in the past couple of years. What do you find are some of the kind of key differences with this, particularly in comparison to a more traditional white boat?
Yeah, I mean, I think, firstly, I mean, you know, the reason why we're involved with these projects, including Rev, of course, as well, which we're doing the interior of. I think it comes down to we're considered quite a flexible, easy to work with company, and, you know, we the other questions of things like a house style. You know, we generally, we've never sort of wanted a house style, so we're not sort of repeating the same sort of design each time. You know, we're very much appeal to clients who are maybe don't know what they want, or they've seen other stuff, but that's not what they want. You know, they want something, you know, unique to themselves. And I think, you know, explorer yachts can come under that umbrella as well, because, you know, a lot of these clients, it's their first explorer. You know, they've maybe gone from a white boat going to the front, so they don't know for sure yet what they really want. And so I think they want to work with a designer who is perhaps very open to their ideas, or to, you know, what they're thinking. Rather than, oh, well, this is what you're going to get because you've seen it in my portfolio and this is what I do the whole time. And then they can go to those designers, and they're brilliant designs, but they come to us for a sort of maybe a slightly more open-minded approach to things. And I think with explorers, you know, it's very much about the sort of functionality and the experience on the yacht, rather than, you know, the obvious sort of posing sort of, you know, in Monaco or Saint-Tropez. And so the clients need a little bit of time to really think about, you know, the functionality of what's actually happening on this yacht, because it's a lot, you know, there's a lot more happening on these explorers. So I think that's reflected, you know, in the interior. So, you know, there's the obvious things of, I mean, the first obvious, which is happening in white boats as well, but there's this kind of holistic approach to kind of wanting the outside in. You know, it's not about the experience inside, it's about the experience outside. And I think that's, to be fair, that's relevant to all yachts now. But equally, you know, you're not just going to hot countries, you're going to kind of cold countries, and, you know, you need to be protected from the environment, because, you know, you're going to, you know, slightly, the environment where you're going is not just the Med, where you can open loads of hatches and doors and things like that. And, you know, you have to be a little careful you can't be too exposed either to the environment. So, the materials, the use of the materials inside, you know, they want it to be more practical. You know, they want to be able to walk around in a wet wetsuit and sort of sit down and eat a burger, you know, or something crazy like that. Yes, but it's like, that's what we'd all want to do. But you wouldn't do that on a, maybe so much on a main saloon of a white boat. But so you have to kind of give these environments and these situations where they can, you know, they feel that there's a ruggedness to the yacht and a functionality to it, I suppose.
And you mentioned Rev then. That's obviously at kind of one end of the spectrum of practicality, first and foremost. That's the job of the yacht. How's it been working on that project?
Well, it's been great. I mean, it's a bit frustrating because, you know, the project obviously has slowed down a little bit for commercial reasons. But, it's hopefully sort of cracking on again, you know, this year. I mean, obviously it's on another scale as far as sort of interior. But it's really interesting because the what's been really interesting about it, because obviously it's a full effectively PYC or even SOLAS kind of interior. So the materials are always limited in what you can use within reason. But equally, the client had a very, a very clear sort of vision of sort of a minimal sort of almost Scandinavian feel to the interior, but also with it sort of quite an industrial feel. So, you know, we have the kind of hint of metal, a lot of metal and even, believe it or not, concrete. And a sort of, a sort of really interesting and unusual palette of materials. And again, you have these functionality spaces. So it's not all the same. It's not repeated, copy and paste all the way through. There's very clear sort of areas of different experiences. And I think that's something, on a normal white boat, we all know we've got a main saloon and a dining room. And I've had a pound for every time someone says, oh, we never use these areas, of course. But, why do you have a quarter of the interior is an area that you hardly ever use? Because it's almost too formal. And you can't sit down on sofas in your bikini because, you might have sun cream on. And then you've got an upper saloon, which is kind of where everyone ends up, or, the sun deck or something. Yeah, so I think that the zoning of the interior on a kind of explorer is very much more, the word, I suppose, it's just very more obvious. You can really do that because they're generally bigger, but also you have this kind of, this idea of having different experiences. It's kind of like that. That's kind of really part of the fun and the challenge of doing an explorer. The reason why we're probably involved in quite a few of them is because of, I think as much as anything about the sort of the company, the way we are and our design philosophy, of being so very open and easy to work with as well. And I think it kind of kicked off a little bit with Ulysses, really, which is now Andromeda. And, again, there was a very short period of time. The client had sort of really messed around a little bit, not really knowing how to do the interior. I think at one point they were trying to do it themselves and it was all time was running out. And so, the brokers were like, well, look, I know a company who could really help you do this and get this over the line quickly and, without the kind of usual, designer sort of, maybe emotions and things like that. Let's just get the job done properly. And so we were recommended for it, and literally we had to design that whole yacht in sort of months, and get it turned around. But also more importantly, it was like a full sort of PYC SOLAS sort of interior, and it was being built by the outfitting company. We were actually cruise ship companies, so it was like on every level, it was like an amazing challenge, but. I really enjoyed it. I really learned a lot about construction using the kind of more cruise ship, should we say, techniques. But managing to kind of, and I think they at the end, these contractors, because they started out very aggressively, like, well, this is what we're doing, and I managed to kind of cajole them into kind of going, well, look, yeah, we can still put your panels in, but then on top of that, we'll put some nice leather panels that are decorative, and yes, we can add some tolerance in there so that your guys can just stick them on the wall, no problem. So I had to kind of learn with them and teach them and take them with me on this kind of journey. So they were going from a rock bottom sort of up, and I was coming from a sort of top level and we met in the middle. And I think a lot of people were really quite shocked and surprised at the end result of the interior of Andromeda, what we achieved for the budget. And I think, that kind of put us on the map a little bit as kind of people who understood that process. And, we're now involved in quite a few other projects that are definitely, where the clients are interested and impressed by that and want to kind of go down that that route a bit more.
And you touched on then how people end up with these spaces on board that they don't use. There's also been a lot of talk kind of post-COVID about people using their yachts differently, potentially spending more time on board. Do you think this is the case? And do you think that might impact some of those design decisions moving forwards?
It's definitely, I think, you know, I don't know the whole industry and the whole market, of course, but in my situation, I would say, yeah, it's definitely, without doubt, affected the client's attitude. And even the white boats, you know, they intend to spend more time on there. So, again, it comes down to, you know, particularly the deck areas, they really want to take a lot more effort in the, you know, making sure that the exterior decks, the sun decks and the aft decks are much more multifunctional, and that, you know, because they're going to be spending weeks on the boat instead of, you know, days. And it goes obviously without saying that the explorers are obviously going to go out for weeks at a time. And, you know, we're working on a couple of other Explorer projects where these guys are, you know, it's at the time of their lives as well, where they're like, it's a combination of, you know, getting a certain age and kind of maybe not retiring fully from business, but, you know, sort of saying, right, you know, this is a new chapter in our lives where we are literally going to up sticks and travel, you know, around the world by sea, or at least, you know, have our yacht accessible around the world. And, you know, it's very much focused on, you know, firstly, you know, obviously a helicopter access, storage even, and then submarines are now, you know, and this sort of obviously the package of toys, vehicles, and you know, getting those on and off the yacht is not that easy, and storage of all those. So they're taking up a lot more room, these things. But avoiding that kind of support boat thing, you know, that, you know, a lot of them are just like, look, I don't want two boats, you know, I just don't want one. And then, yeah, so, but then they, because you're going to be on the yacht for so many weeks, if, you know, in reality, after about, you know, we all have it in our holiday, after about 5 days of going to the same restaurant, the same thing, you kind of, you know, you're not bored, but you're like, I could do with a change. So let's go for sushi, you know, and let's do, yeah, and it's the same for them. You know, these guys will, they get bored eventually of doing the same thing on the yacht. And, you know, they want the same, you know, the same dining experience. So they want different dining experiences. They want different seating experiences. They want, you know, cinema. They want the games room. Obviously, a spa is with, you know, and proper spas with proper treatment rooms, you know, where they can have, you know, the full sort of set of treatments. And so, yeah, there's a much more demand for the lifestyle thing. I mean, you know, I get the clients now, they're actually imagining, you know, you sit in a meeting and they're saying, yeah, and then we can, you know, watch the I don't know, the sunset from here, and then from there we can, you know, they're really thinking hard about these experiences on their yacht. You know, oh, we can have a barbecue here, and we can, it's like, you know, from the hot tub we can sit here and look. I mean, I, you know, they're really, it's not just, oh, we're going to spend 2 weeks on it, it's just a status symbol or something. It's like, no, this is really going to be our home for the next, you know, few months, and we want it to feel like a home and have the, you know, that kind of flexibility.
And is that a big shift to be sat in a meeting like that and have a client that is thinking in that way in comparison to maybe, you know, 10, 20
yeah,
years ago?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, obviously, you know, it's not every client like that, of course, but yeah, no, without a doubt, it's definitely a part of the job that, you know, is you know, we're much more aware of. I mean, I don't spend my whole time on yachts, obviously. So I have to try and keep up with, you know, what these guys want to do and how they live their lives on the yacht, and also talking to the crew is really important, you know, talking to the captains and learning how they really use the yacht on you know when they're actually on board is equally really important. And, you know, we get so much kind of information and feedback, you know, from the crew, which is, you know, really really important for us.
And obviously, one of the other kind of big buzzwords that's around at the moment is sustainability, quite rightly. Do you think owners have started to be more aware in terms of the materials they're using on board, in terms of some of the decisions they're making, or not yet?
It's mixed, a little mixed, I would say. Without doubt, you know, the extreme was a rev, where, you know, we are definitely, we did a, you know, a study on that, and where we can, I mean, we're a little bit held back by the regulations, you know, by the SOLAS regs, because unfortunately those materials are at another level of safety and fire and have to be tested, etc. So we are limited a little bit to, you know, loose furniture, should we say. So, you know, yeah, we've got like kind of furniture, like, you know, we've got some dining tables made out of, basically plastic collected off beaches. You know, we'll have, you know, some materials we're using on loose cushions and things like that can be, you know, those types of materials. But the actual, you know, unfortunately, we can't use those kind of materials yet on sort of bulkheads and ceilings and stuff because they don't pass the regs. But I think clients are aware of it. You know, it's not universally discussed yet, but I think it's a matter for us as designers. We have to kind of be one step ahead anyway and be aware of what's, you know, things like carpets, things like that are now starting to come through. Certainly on the smaller yachts, you can certainly use them easier. And as long as there's no massive price difference for them, I think clients will definitely be open to it, yeah.
What are some of the biggest challenges of the design process?
Well, it's a good question. I think actually at the moment, I don't know if this is kind of answering your question, but one of the challenges we have is actually access to the clients, believe it or not, time, communication with them. Because, you know, they're all super busy. You know, obviously travel is still quite difficult. Actually, ironically, we're finding that, you know, especially on new builds where we have a deadline to meet, you know, to get their approval on designs and then get it to the shipyards, you know, that delivery date doesn't change. The shipyards, you know, you have to deliver the information by a certain date, but that gap can close very quickly. And then if clients are, they're all so busy, and it's like, some of them don't actually, I don't think they quite realize just what a kind of commitment it is for them as well, to kind of be involved in that design process. And, to, you know, and they do have to approve everything. So at the moment, it's kind of accessing clients face-to-face is very hard. I would say actually, to be honest, that is probably one of the biggest challenges at the moment for us.
And is that being impacted further with obviously kind of supply chain issues and costs? So just there's lots more decisions to be made, or have you not seen that impact so much yet?
No, I think obviously costs are obviously going up. But, you know, we so far, to be fair, we haven't really experienced, you know, too much of that yet. I mean, the biggest problem, obviously, as a UK-based company is now, is obviously post-Brexit, is the supply of goods into Europe, you know, is more challenging. The sort of the issue of VAT is just a pain, which, you know, it's just got to be dealt with as well, of course.
And no need for specific examples unless you'd like to give some, but what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen owners make with design choices? And do you find that really frustrating if an owner's really pushing a decision that you feel isn't right?
I suppose one of the obvious ones is, you know, we always have to deal with this a little bit, is that kind of the owner wanting to steal, should we say, the crew spaces, you know, the sort of the pantries and the galleys and stuff, getting shrunken down because they feel their spaces aren't big enough. And I think sometimes they look at a GA and they're kind of disappointed by, you know, you've gone from 70 to 75 meters or something on the design, and yet their spaces don't feel any bigger. And there's never enough space for them. And I guess that's reality, though. There is never enough space for anyone on a yacht. And, you know, then the air conditioning spaces start coming in and the technical spaces. So I think the biggest mistake would be to kind of, particularly things like pantries, so it affects your service and access, you know, staircases around the yacht and stuff like that. But I wouldn't say, you know, our job is to obviously try and prevent clients from making obvious mistakes. So I'd never kind of allow a client to, or, you know, I wouldn't purposely allow them to make a, you know, shocking mistake, knowing that it would be a disaster. But I can't really think of anything particularly that has been that bad at this moment. So it's not something I'm going to tell you about anyway.
And do you have a kind of ideal client or client brief that you like working with? What, you know, what do you find really exciting if you sit down and have that initial meeting, or does it just vary project to project?
No, I mean, I think they're all challenging. I know that's a kind of cop out answer, but they really are, and you know, they're all slightly different, believe it or not. I wouldn't want to kind of pigeonhole a client, you know, say who's an ideal client or not. I mean, ironically, they are all getting. I bet not, I can't answer that one. Carry on.
And you obviously do exterior and interior design. Do you have a preference? Do you like when you're working on both aspects of a yacht? What are kind of some of the similarities and differences?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I came from exterior design and I guess I started doing exterior yacht design. But I mean, for me, design is design and it's a mentality and it's an ability to be able to design anything. And, you know, I don't design cars, but I'm very interested in them and I look at cars and I'm very opinionated about car design, but equally I look at a pair of trainers and go, well, you know, they're nicely designed. And if someone said, oh, can you design me a house, you know, or a pair of trainers? It's the same thing. You know, I think as a designer, you can either do that. You can either think in 3D. You can communicate. You can transfer your ideas down onto a piece of paper, you know, through a pen, literally. Or you can't. I mean, you know, like for instance, and it comes down to your brain. You know, maths is not my strong point. Yet, you know, obviously, the art side of it is my strength. So, a roundabout answer to your question is, I mean, I enjoy both of them, and it's really nice to do the two together. You know, so obviously, it's nice to be able to do the exterior and the interior of the same project because they kind of are linked. And you know, we are working on projects where we're only doing the exterior or we're only doing the interior, and yeah, we all get on well, the designers, but there's always that kind of frisson of kind of, oh well, he wants to move a window and it's going to spoil my profile. And equally, you know, interior designer wants to move, you know, effect. So it's just the way, you know, the way it is. But I don't really have a preference, if I'm honest. I think exterior, they're very different. I mean, exteriors is, okay, you've got the overall sort of design of the yacht and the overall look. But what I think one of the biggest changes in exterior design is our ability, but the fact that we're allowed to add another layer of detail to the surfacing, you know, so because of the technology and the way they're built, they're so sophisticated, the shipyards now, they can build pretty much any shapes within reason we want in metal, and which you couldn't have done 25 years ago. So, you know, there's another layer now, a level of detail we're allowed, whereas before in the old days, it was just a profile on an old drawing board. And most yachts from, you know, 30 years ago are kind of designed in 2D and then just sort of stretched, you know, across. So there's no surfacing sort of thing, so in 3D. Whereas obviously it's a much more sophisticated today from that. But equally on the interiors, from a designer point of view, there's a lot more freedom and fun factor to be able to be had and to be kind of quite creative. I think you can be quite creative in interiors still. I mean, there's loads of, you know, you can come up with new ideas all the time, but you know, you're influenced by something completely separate. So you might see something from a hotel sort of lobby that you think, well, actually, I quite like the concept of that. And then it ends up being a headboard or something later. Or you don't just copy it directly, but you're influenced by stuff you see around you all the time. And it's often come with a completely different sort of design. Sort of, like I say, it could be commercial architectural design, and then you bring that into interiors. No, I don't really have a preference for either.
And what's the most rewarding aspect? Do you like when you finally see the yacht on the water? Is it actually when you come back and see the yacht in 5 years' time and it's been kind of loved and enjoyed? Do you have a kind of most rewarding moment?
I mean, the obvious answer is, of course, who wouldn't like to walk down to Monaco Harbour and see your pride and joy you've designed? I mean, there's nothing like it. Mm. You know, it's an amazing, particularly if you do the exterior, there's nothing quite like seeing it in the flesh and go, wow. But though, interestingly, after about 3 to 4 years of looking at the same project, you do get a little bit of, you know, a bit of kind of fatigue kind of sets in, and you kind of like, oh, you know, obviously I'm bored of it, but I'm like, I really don't want to see that again. But you get an amazing, you know, like you say, you see it again 2 years later, and you go, or 3 years later, you go, oh, actually, wow. Well, I really like that design and I'm really pleased and really proud of it. And because you see it with fresh eyes again, I suppose. So, but yeah, no, I mean, it's big boys' toys. I mean, I'm not going to deny, I don't get a kick out of seeing one of my designs sat there in the marina. I mean, this summer, I mean, as an example, I constantly get photos from people on holiday and, you know, they're on a beach somewhere and they see one of my projects or, you know, one of our projects out in the bay and they send me a picture and they go, wow, that looks great. I've just seen one. And so that's nice that people recognize, you know, our projects and, people send me pictures of it as well. So
Which yacht do you think you get the most photos
this year it's been Yacht Go. That seems to be everywhere around the Med. So I'm constantly getting photographs of Yacht Go, for instance. But there's a few of them knocking around. And obviously Al Lusail, which is a very distinctive yacht. She's photographed a lot. And I you see her a lot, particularly on Instagram, actually. It's not, I mean, Al Lusail is a good example where, that was like probably one of the most exciting projects to be involved in a way, because we were given so much freedom by the client to basically design what we want. And also, they froze the design at the concept stage and said, build that, don't evolve it, don't be bullied by the shipyard into tweaking it, changing it and stuff. So, we really did recreate the concept. But I call it a Marmite boat. It's not everyone's cup of tea. It's very radical in some ways. So 50% of people maybe like it and 50% don't. And that's fine. I don't mind doing that. But something like Yacht Go is universally, liked. It's just one that's just got it's not radical. It's not boring, but it's got a sort of identity to it, which is recognizable. But so exterior design is a tricky one. You designers, of course, the mistake you do is you try and design for yourself. What I like, but because I'm a designer and it's like a wet dream. But reality is that's not always the most successful route to go. Design classics are often, they sneak up on you really when you don't realize it. So. I think Lucille was great, but equally Yacht Arrow we did from Fedship, launched 2019-20, and again she's like a classic kind of profile. It's like proportions and stuff, but the detailing, it's an example of a yacht where it really has got quite a lot of detail. And it's only when you get up to the boat and see it that the creases and the sharpness to some of the lines and edges. And, there were parts of that boat that I didn't think the yard would be able to build, yet they were like, we can do that. And so that's also equally, I'm very proud of that yacht as a kind of contrast to, say, Al Lusail, which is overtly radical. We got Arrow, which is kind of discreet, but actually from a designer point of view, I'm really, really proud of.
And you spoke a moment ago about that ability to be able to transform ideas into drawings and 3D concepts and, that innate ability to design. Do you think you're seeing enough of that young talent come through and into the industry? And is that changing as, computer modelling and things become more prevalent?
At the expense of sounding like an old, grumpy old man. I think there's an element of truth in that. Unfortunately, the power of the computer is such that, the sketching, the pen is lost, within the industry, within all design industries, I'm sure it's the same. A lot of the young students come through. It's not so much that they can't, because I'm sure they can. It's just they don't have the confidence to do it. They're almost embarrassed. It's almost like, asking them to sketch something. It's almost like asking them to take their clothes off or something. They're like, really, in public, drawing, it really is kind of embarrassing for them. Give them a computer and a mouse, they're like confident as you like, they're no problem. And I think it's about just giving people sort of the confidence to say, look, this is not Leonardo da Vinci. We're not asking for a work of art or something. But try and sort of communicate your ideas and get them down quicker than trying to be restricted in reality by the computer. So I would like to see more of that, and I do sort of often. If we interview potential designers, it's one of the things I do ask them to try and do is to do some kind of sketching. And also, equally, I do like to take in kind of like young students who are at school or thinking of going to university or thinking of a career in design, and they come in for like a couple of weeks or a week or something. And that's what we get them to do. We say, look, try drawing some stuff and try and learn that and try and practice drawing, because drawing is like anything. It's like riding a bike. You obviously have some natural ability. Some people are better at riding a bike, but everyone can learn to drive a bike eventually or ride one. And I think drawing is the same. You have to practice at it, and you can cheat. You can use underlays and all this sort of thing. It's not cheating. It's all part of improving it. But I do encourage them. But I mean, there are yacht design courses, you know, for exterior. So, you know, we have three or four guys, all ex kind of from the sort of my school of design, that kind of focus on the exterior. But interior, you know, they come from all over the, you know, different schools of design. But I think the hardest thing at the moment, of course, is getting people. You know, we've been looking for people for a while, and I don't want to get into politics, but I don't quite understand why it's proven to be so difficult to find people. And you know, for instance, we've now got a guy coming from Europe who's, you know, we're having to sponsor him and bring, because he doesn't have, you know, right to work here. So that's now a pain. But you know, we do have quite a few like Spanish, Italian. We had French as well, you know, designers in the office, which I think is really important, that we have that sort of mix of multicultural sort of designers, because, you know, it's really interesting and really, important to be sort of, to have that mix in there. But yes, it is proving to be actually quite hard to kind of, you know, get people at the moment.
And that's obviously, you know, the people that you recruit will be a big part of H2's future. Where do you see the company moving going forwards?
Well, you know, I think we've kind of got to a point where, I mean, I think it's quite important for me, and this is not a judgment, I'd like to stay relatively small, you know. I mean, we're up to like 20, and I think, you know, we've got, I don't know, 12 projects. I think that's more than enough. You know, I want to be involved in every project. I like, you know, I'm expected to be as well, but I can't be involved in more than that. And so it's more about, you know, quality, not quantity, I think, in the end. But I, you know, I don't have any kind of ambitions to kind of, you know, make the company bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, for me, there's no point. Yeah. But I think it's more about, you know, leaving a bit of a, you know, I'd like to leave a bit of a legacy, and I'd like to leave a kind of great business for the guys who work for me. I mean, you know, one of the reasons it's, you know, it's not called Johnny Horsfield Design is that I always felt that, you know, I wanted to create a kind of brand that would you know, carry on perhaps, you know, when I'm not around. And and I think that's the idea, is that you know, the company can continue without its founder, so to speak. And I think that's really important. But I think, you know, moving forwards, the design point, I think we just carry on doing what we're doing, keep going. Yeah.
And you've got some pretty exciting projects that you're working on now, Project Vento, of course, being one of them. Are there any in particular that you're really looking forward to seeing hit the water, or that you've reached that point of you've looked at it for too long now?
No, that's unfair. No, it's an unfair question, because obviously I wouldn't want to sort of particularly highlight one particular project over another. I mean, as I say, they're all quite interesting. I mean, if I was to be honest, I mean, Rev, obviously, to be fair, I think everyone would be interested to see that. You know, obviously, Espen's done the exterior, and we're doing the interior, which hopefully will be a little fresh and a little bit different to maybe what they've seen before. If nothing else, just the scale of it and the materials we're using, it'll be kind of. And I think the functionality of the yacht and what it stands for, I think, is really, really exciting. So, if I was to pick something, you know, I guess at the moment, I guess that would be the one I'm absolutely looking forward to.
And are there any others that are on your drawing board that you can tell us about? Or have you signed many an NDA?
Well, of course. like I say, we've got a couple of equally exciting explorers, believe it or not, that are early stages, which are, you know, really full on, you know, taking the kind of the Ulysses, Andromeda type footprint, not quite as big as that, but taking that kind of concept. And taking it to maybe a new level, which is really exciting. And as I say, I find it exciting because I think it's a really interesting part of the industry, and that's something that's we've been sort of, I don't know, been talking about for a long time. In some ways, certainly before Ulysses, even, you know, there was this thing about explorers were coming, and, you know, have they come? Not quite. I think they're getting there. You know, there's I think there's a renewed interest again in them, and. I think that will definitely be a part of the market that will continue to expand, I think. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to, we've got a couple of those currently under development. So that's sort of all I can say at the moment on that.
Oh, well, when you can say a bit more, we'll have to have you back on the podcast to discuss those projects. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat Interview, which has been mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.